Hi folks, before we start this podcast, I just want to say thank you so much to the Patreon members who support us online. This is going to be a difficult time for us. We have we've had to put equipment elsewhere to do some remote recording. We are going to try and continue to bring you as many podcasts as we can. But if you have if you get something from these, please give something back. We could really do with the support. If you could head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There's a range of options there for you. Just click on the one that you suits you best and maybe chip in. It could help us keep going over what is going to be a very difficult period. If we're not your cup of tea, as they say, you know what? There are other creators, there are other podcasters, there's musicians and there's artists out there that are going to suffer over the next while because they can't get out and they can't perform or they can't produce. Maybe chip in with them. This is going to be a difficult time for all of us, but we'll all be better off if we all pull together. Thank you. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today I'm on my own. Just a couple of things for you folks. We are doing these pods remotely. Martin is hoping to join me at some stage shortly, but unfortunately he's had a bit of a setback at home. If we can do it, we can get him in. I'll get him in before the end. But in the meantime, decided to try and lighten the mood and actually focus on things like the positive stories that are coming out. Again, I would stress that you look at the things that the good stories are coming out on social media. We're seeing things like the light the way, hashtag light the way, you know, people putting a candle in the window or a light, leaving the light on at night to let healthcare professionals and workers know that we stand with them throughout this crisis, that we support them every step of the way, and that we, as a country, as a community, as a society, know that this is all for the greater good, and every life saved is just a brilliant thing to achieve. This is a difficult situation. I'm seeing some very scary statistics. We've seen what's happened today. We've seen Spain go on lockdown. There's talks of closure of ports. There's a lot of scaremongering going on. I'd ask you please not to be sharing posts that aren't verified. I'd ask you to make sure that if you are going to share anything, make sure that you understand the source. Is it verified? Is it almost second checked? I know the onus isn't on everybody and is the members of the public as it is on, say, journalists. But at the same time, don't want to be the people creating panic. You know, we don't need our armed forces coming out to have to issue clarifications about what people are saying on WhatsApp. So, you know, let's not make life more difficult for us as it is. I said before, the Brexit thing has prepared the supply chain because they were worried about what would happen in the event of a no deal Brexit. It's put us in a position whereby, you know, we've made precautions for these things and we can start to see the benefits of that now. So, you know, there is some good news to come out of Brexit. Another thing that's come out that's quite well is the hashtag self-isolation help. There are people across the country making it their business to help other people. Just out of community spirit, there are people volunteering. Get involved on Twitter. Fair play to Helen O'Reilly. She's been brilliant on this. I've seen it picked up by newspapers in the UK and across other places. You know, it's really, really heartening to see other people, whether it's collecting prescriptions or just getting bread and milk for people who can't really leave their homes. And also remember that in this situation, the people who are already vulnerable, the disabled, the people in traveller accommodation, emergency accommodation, homeless hubs and these places, they're already vulnerable. So, you know, if you can make contact with them, consider reaching out and finding out what they need and maybe you can help. I've been up to Baleskin Direct Provision Centre. You know, you can go up to these places. You don't have to go in. You don't have to do it just to you know, feel good or listen to all that nonsense about virtue signaling. You can just simply leave stuff at reception. You know, we can all play our part. I'd also say be very mindful of how this is actually going down internationally. The WHO has now said that Europe is now the epicenter of the outbreak, which is, you know, it's a scary time. We're on self-isolation. I have kids here who are off school now for a number of weeks. And the funny thing is my parents both said, drop the kids down if they're bored. And you're thinking, yeah, that'd be easy. And then you went, well, no, actually, that's not the right thing to do. So, you know, make those things, make those calls, understand that, I understand that my parents want to help, but I'd rather them be around for the long term. I'm not saying that they're particularly exposed, but nonetheless, they're more exposed than I am. And you know what, if for the sake of a little bit of domestic boisterousness, I've butchered that word, but nonetheless, you get what I'm saying. It's better off me taking a bit of heat for a few weeks than putting other people at risk. It's about us acting responsibility as a society, as a community, as a country. The other things that I've seen that are really positive are the number of people who have actually been able to talk to and listen to doctors and then actually to call out other people on this. It's just the flu nonsense. I would encourage that. I don't want anybody to get into arguments or get into debates. But if you're on your WhatsApp groups and you're on your chats with your friends and all the rest of it, and some of them are, you know, pretending that everything is just normal, it's not. I was listening to Malcolm Gladwell talking with Bill Simmons early this morning, and he was talking about the statistics out of the US and how it's, you know, everybody's using kind of this arbitrary baseline of we are Italy 2 weeks ago or we are Italy a month ago or whatever the situation is. But nonetheless, his point was that a best case scenario in the US was 1 million American deaths. That's 1 million people. I'm struggling to even comprehend that. I've spoken to other people, and when you run the numbers based on exposure, based on the rate that this virus transmits and actually causes death, it could be much, much worse than that. So we need to lower the curve. The only way we can lower the curve is by acting responsibly, by washing our hands, by making sure we sneeze into our elbow, making sure if we're not feeling well, we don't present in a GP's office, we ring the number, we take all the steps that to make sure that we take responsibility for ourselves and we don't put other people in danger. We don't, you know, we spread goodwill, we spread solidarity, we try not to spread the virus. Final thing is now, part of this podcast, I will be speaking with GP Matthew O'Toole, who is a friend of the pod and is right at the front line. Matthew has been very kind to give us his time, and I know that it's a very stressful time for doctors and nurses and everybody in the healthcare system. Make sure you let them know that we are all there for them. It's just goes without saying. Some of the great things we've seen online are people, you know, leaving a table in a restaurant for doctors and nurses for a free meal. These are the things. We're better than this. We are not just atomized. We are not just people in cubicles. We are not just people in co-living units. We are a better society in this. And listen to the experts. Keep an eye on the HSE website. Check out what's happening. But make sure, above all else, mind yourselves. Talk to you all soon. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by GP Matthew O'Toole. Matthew, how are you?
Good, Tony. How are you?
I'd say I'm less stressed than you are, buddy.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say we're stressed. I just say we're under a lot of pressure at the moment. That's kind of the way we describe things at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'm being a bit flippant, and look, I just want to say first and foremost, thanks so much for all the work you guys are doing. I saw the picture of the practice with you know, the social distancing and the things. It was, and I'm smiling while I'm saying it, but I understand how serious it really is for you guys on the front line, and you know, we do appreciate all the work that goes in, and mind yourselves and keep yourselves safe.
Yeah, well, I mean, from a GP perspective, like, I mean, since Monday, like, my job has completely changed, like, entirely. Like, you know, the job that I do as a GP today is very, very different to the job I was doing on Friday last week. And we've just changed everything that we're doing. I mean, in terms of our interactions, I mean, the majority of our interactions now with people are over the phone or using stuff like Skype or other kind of telemedicine apps to communicate with people. And that's not something we were doing a week ago. So we've had to, like, rapidly evolve and change our practice as a result of this. And, like, what's been incredible is the response. I mean, every single patient has been totally on board with it and totally supportive. And you're right, as you said, in terms of our practice, I mean, our practice secretaries are now wearing, you know, full-on face masks. Again, that was to protect them more than to protect the public. Mm. And they've been, as I said, completely on board with it. as of Monday, we're like, you know, enforcing social distancing within the practice, which means we're limiting the number of people in the building. You know, we're staying a meter away from patients, you know, during consultations. So yeah, I mean, it has been a really, really, really interesting and historical week from a GP perspective, because we've just had to totally change the way we work, you know, in a week.
And I suppose you said historical, but it's unprecedented, these events. It is absolutely, we none of us have lived through this. People keep talking about the Spanish flu of 1918, and then again I'm smiling because I believe it started in Kansas, but the Spanish got the rap for it in the end. But how can I ask, just, you said that the patients have reacted really well. What do you mean by that? What specifically do patients should be doing, and what are we doing?
Yeah, well, I suppose the way things are doing at the moment is that what we're saying is GPs right across the country have now stopped putting a walk-in service. So basically, we are now only providing appointments for people who ring in advance. And the reason we're doing that basically is because we're trying to limit the amount of footfall into the practice. And that's, again, to protect our staff, but also to protect other people within the practice. Because what we need to keep doing is we need to keep providing the service that we've always kept providing. So we have a huge number of frail, unwell, vulnerable people that need to see us on a daily basis. Mm. And we need to protect them first and foremost. So what we're doing now is, when people are ringing to make an appointment, we're calling them back and we're triaging those calls, and we're asking them, have they got respiratory symptoms? Because if they do, then, you know, number one, we might be able to manage them and give them advice over the phone. But number two, you know, coming into the GP might not be the most appropriate thing to do. But it's a change, because most people, when you ring to make an appointment with the GP, you know, you get your appointment. But what people are having to do now is actually tell us why they want an appointment, which is, again, a big change for a GP. And, you know, I had thought that patients might be put out by this, or, you know, might be reluctant to disclose why they need the appointment. But I have to say, over the course of this week, not a single person has complained. Everybody has complied. You know, people are getting why we're having to do this. So that's why, you know, it's been really welcome to see the reaction that we've had from the public. They kind of get why we're doing that, which is important.
Well, it is really important, but it also shows to the, you know, how adaptable we are as people, as a society, because I take a lot of comfort in that. I don't know if you've seen a lot of the stuff online where, you know, there are restaurants putting, you know, leaving a table free for doctors and nurses every night, saying, if you want to come in, there'll be a dinner here for you, and things like that. And, you know, people stepping up. I want to try and focus on the positives of this, because it is a huge challenge to us as a society, as a country, and across the world. In terms of personal responsibility, obviously, you know, the we've locked down, and I know we're probably not supposed to be using the phrase lockdown, but we they've closed the schools, the colleges, the childcare facilities. Am I right in saying that, you know, this social distancing that we're all trying to practice now, this is just to, you know, we need to slow the surge, or slow the growth and flatten the curve, as they say?
Yeah, so I suppose, I mean, we're in some ways we're lucky in Ireland that we're not doing this for the first time like the Chinese were, and we're not doing this for the second or third time like the Italians were. So we have learned a lot from the way that the Chinese and the Italians manage this, and we've gained a lot of information. And I suppose from my perspective, like, I'm involved in several WhatsApp groups at the moment, and we have intensivists or anaesthetists, GPs involved in that group, and they're in constant contact with physicians in both Wuhan and Italy. And they're, you know, we're getting updates on an hour by hour basis from these doctors in Wuhan and Italy. So, like, we're getting, you know, really, really up to date information from across the world to help us get through this, which is just really humbling to see from a collegiality perspective. But what we know from China is the way that they managed to control and limit the spread was through social distancing. So the most important thing at the moment really is to make sure that our health system does not get overwhelmed. So at the moment we are trying to rapidly increase capacity within the health service. But what we need to do is to make sure that we slow the spread as much as we can, so that, as you said, we flatten the curve so that the health system can actually cope with the increased demand that will be placed on it. And we know that the strongest and most statistically significant way of flattening that curve is by, you know, really strict social distancing. So the Chinese did this really well. The Italians didn't do it so well at the start. They're doing it really, really well now. So since Italy has gone into lockdown, they have essentially, you know, enforced social distancing. So that is why it is critically important to do what we're doing now, and that we do it earlier rather than later.
Yeah, I've seen today, I don't know if you saw the, I know how busy you are, you've seen things today, like the WHO have said that Europe is now the epicenter of the virus in terms of the clusters. And we've seen Spain has declared, you know, that they're going on lockdown. And you know, I'm hopeful that means that the people who are taking action now are taking it quicker than, you know, learning from Wuhan, learning from Italy. And, you know, and that is not, I'm conscious of not blaming authorities as well and doctors and nurses, because this is a brand new virus, and, you know, who's to say what was going on. But in terms of flattening the curve, this still, that means then what we're actually trying to do is build capacity into the health system, help GPs, help nurses, help people that, you know, because the vast majority of people, and this is not to lessen what this virus is, but the vast majority of people who become symptomatic will recover. But nonetheless, it is a dangerous virus.
Yeah, I mean, again, we have a huge amount of data on this now, and the data that we're getting is growing on a day-by-day and an hour-by-hour basis. But we know, like, you know, we're expecting the majority of the population to get infected with COVID-19, so that's 60 to 70% of the population, which, you know, which could be anything upwards of 1.9 million people, will become infected over the next few months. But we know that 80% of people will get this and will not need to see a doctor. They will have flu-like symptoms, and they'll be able to manage that themselves. And we know, like, children are nearly completely asymptomatic. So 80% of people will get this. Who get this will be fine, will not need to see a doctor, will be able to manage that at home. I suppose the critically important bit is in that 80% of people, what they need to do is worry about the 1/6 of people that will become unwell. So the onus is on the 80% to self-isolate and to prevent spreading the infection onto the 1/6 of the population that will become unwell from this. So the key message really through all of this is that the way that this is going to pan out, it's really nothing to do with what we as doctors or we as healthcare professionals do. It's really down to what every single person in this society does as an individual. And we have to take responsibility for this going forward over the next few weeks or few months. As I said, it is all about stopping the spread of this virus, and the 80% of us that will get the infection, but that will feel, you know, that we'll be able to manage it ourselves, they're the ones who need to focus on containing this and not passing it on to other people. Because, as you said, 1/6 of people will become unwell, and I suppose the single biggest risk factor that determines whether you can, you know, deal with this on your own or whether you will need medical help is really your age, number one. And two, your underlying medical problems. They're the two significant factors which determine whether you will become unwell from this or whether you'll be able to manage this yourself.
Yeah, I hear you, and I hear you as a parent and as a son, and, you know, as a member of a community, that's what we need to be doing. We need to understand that while I can go out for my run and feel good about myself, I need to make sure that I'm practicing safe social distancing and that I'm not going and making things difficult for people who are vulnerable. And I mean, I'm saying that I'm very conscious that usually sitting to the left of me is Martin McMahon, and Martin would be, you know, he's off self-isolating himself now, and he would be one of those people who would be vulnerable. Last thing for me, do you think, I keep hearing the phrase that, you know, the government will do take the right steps at the right time. This is escalating now on an EU-wide basis, so it's not, I don't want to be political about it, it's escalating on it. Do you foresee that this will be there, that this lockdown will grow, and that we will just have to, everybody will have to accept that life is going to be completely changed for at least the foreseeable future, and then we should be able to see that, you know, we will go back to some sort of normality maybe within 30 days or 45 days or whatever the get it when we build up the capacity in the health system?
Yeah, so I suppose, I mean, you know, again, I suppose the social distancing is the single most effective thing and the single biggest key take-home message from all of this. We know that it works. I suppose if we look look at what happened in Italy, they followed a kind of similar enough course to us, and they kind of brought in initially a shutdown of schools and universities, but the people in Italy weren't adhering to social distancing. So they were going to cafes and they were just kind of behaving as normal, really. Mm. You know, children were mixing and they really weren't doing what they were told. At the moment, if we look at what's happening in the UK, you know, we have the Cheltenham Festival, which has just finished. There were thousands and thousands of Irish people over there. The border in Ireland is porous. And at the moment, you know, the United Kingdom aren't enforcing the strict, rigid rules that we are here. Mm. So I mean, yesterday in Dublin city centre, the pubs and the shops in Dublin city last night were full, were busy. So people aren't really doing what they should be doing in terms of social distancing. Mm. And there's a very particular cohort that's doing that. It's the 20, 30, 40-year-olds. The people that really won't be badly affected by this are trying to carry on as normal. So that is what we saw happening in Italy. And that is why eventually what the government had to do was escalate what they were doing. And I suppose at the moment, we're not really in lockdown at the moment in that most businesses are continuing to function. But if you look at Italy, they have literally locked everything down, bar shops, pharmacies and health services.
Yeah.
And unless people start to really strictly enforce the social distancing, then the government will have to go that way. What just makes it very difficult in Ireland is that our neighbour, who we share an island with, are really taking little to no action. And that is a threat to us because we are doing what we should be doing. But our neighbours, who we have a really close relationship, are carrying on as normal. And that really is the biggest threat to us at the moment. It is what the UK isn't actually doing.
Yeah, no, I can talk from personal experience. Some of my work is based in the UK, and I get, you know, because of the travel, you know, you get the email notifications, and I got one from the Eurotunnel telling me, "Don't worry, the Eurotunnel is still open." But they said allow an extra 30 minutes for your journey, and I just went, okay, that's not exactly comforting in my own. I don't want to make it all about me, but nonetheless, I was looking at it going, okay, that's a bit disconcerting. Matthew, look, I suppose just the last thing I want to say is, I mean, and I open with this, so I'll close with this. You guys are on the front line. You guys are the people who are treating people. So I really appreciate what it's doing. And I can tell you that I do hope that people will practice social distancing, that they will make sure that they take responsibility, like washing their hands and not touching their face and sneezing into their elbow, all of these things. I mean, it's not, and making sure that we respect the lockdown and we respect the actual, you know, you can bring your kids out for a walk, but don't bring them out with a gang of kids. All of these things that we need to work on. And I agree with you that, you know, we don't want this to escalate. But on behalf of myself and the people who I know, I just want to thank you for the work you guys are doing and thank you for your time.
Not at all. And I was going to say, from our perspective, I mean, look, the single most important thing, really, I would say, is exactly the same, that people just follow the advice that they have been given. These are extraordinary times. They require extraordinary measures, but this is not going to go on forever. It is difficult. I totally get that, but it will be for a short period of time. The only other thing I would say as well is, I mean, you know, we have a lot of people in our community that are elderly, that are sick, that are vulnerable, that are now scared and actually protectively isolating because they've been advised to do that. So we as a community, those of us, as I said, who are at a lower risk, it's now really our time to do our bit for society, to step up as members of the community. So what I'm asking all of my patients to do at the moment is to check in on their neighbours, those who are vulnerable, those who might not have someone to call on for help, to make sure that they have the food they require in the house, to make sure that they have access to the medicines that they need. Mm. And really importantly, just to keep interacting with them on a human level, because it is a really lonely place to be protectively isolating yourself. It can be really difficult in terms of your mood. So as I said, you know, reach out to a few people, a few elderly members or vulnerable people within the community. Call them, FaceTime them, Skype them. Let them know that you're there if they need your help. But as you said, don't interact with them face to face. We need to really strictly enforce social distancing. And if we as a community get together, I mean, the Irish people are incredible as a nation for pulling together in times of difficulty. This is a time where it will be hugely challenging. But if we pull together, if we support each other, and if we do what we've been told to do, we could actually be the shining light in all of this and be used as an example for our nearest neighbour of what to do right.
GP Matthew O'Toole, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. Thank you very much for having me.